Welcome. If you're a woman who has a sense that there's more out there for you, you're in the right place. I'm Whitney Baker, host of the Electric Ideas podcast. Somewhere along the line of work and kids, life carried on, but I lost track of my truth. I'm on a reflective journey, and that's what this podcast is all about. Each week, I interview a woman who is lighting her own path and offering others hope. Before our conversation ends, we'll share a reflective question for you to explore. Sometimes all we need is a jolt, a fresh idea, an aha moment that connects us to a sense of possibility. This, my friends, is what I call an electric idea.
Welcome back to Electric Ideas. I'm your host, Whitney Baker. For those of you moms tuning in, I wish you a very happy Mother's Day this week. I now have girls who are 11 and 12 years old, as well as a grown stepson. And although I am well out of the weeds when it comes to chasing toddlers or changing diapers, I have become more clear that one of the trickiest parts of motherhood for me is managing the mental load. I feel like there's times where I just want to hang out with my family. I don't want to sign the forms or spend a beautiful Saturday afternoon finding cleats that fit. And while these are very small examples and obviously part of what just comes along with managing a household and being a mother, it's super common for moms to feel frazzled and cluttered in their minds and homes. And there's lots of tools and systems that can help you feel better. And that's why I'm really excited to have today's guest, Amelia Pleasant Kennedy, join me for a special Mother's Day episode. We talk about the concept of a clutter-free mindset and dive into her work as a Fair Play coach. If you're not familiar with the Fair Play method, it was created by a woman named Eve Rodsky, who also wrote a book called Fair Play that you can check out if it speaks to you. Amelia and I will get into all of this in our conversation, but in a nutshell, the Fair Play method that we discuss is simply a system that helps you and your family create more equity when it comes to divvying up domestic responsibilities. I'm all for learning about anything that will help moms reclaim headspace and take back their time. So I knew this was a topic I wanted to explore. All right, before we dive into the show, here's just a little bit more background on my guest. Amelia is a certified life coach, Fair Play facilitator, like I mentioned, but she's also a professional organizer and CEO of A Pleasant Solution. She loves helping women who feel frazzled, busy, and overworked uncover the root cause of clutter in their lives. So Amelia can speak to the topics that we're covering from both a professional and a personal level because she's also a mother of three, including an elite athlete, and a caregiver for her mother who is living with dementia. It's so important to me this week of Mother's Day that you moms who are managing households and caring for so many others feel seen, heard, and supported. So again, happy Mother's Day. Let's get into it. Amelia, welcome to the show.
It's a pleasure to speak with you today.
You are a life coach, a professional organizer, and a Fair Play facilitator, which we are going to learn all about before this show is over. But I find it really interesting that while many women would probably love to hire you to organize their linen closet or something like that, that as you got further into your work, the mental clutter piece really stood out for you. And I know this is a really big challenge for a lot of women in my community. So it's what we're going to focus on today. Can you start by just giving us a little bit of your perspective on this and additionally explain to my listeners what it means to cultivate this clutter-free mindset that you help your clients with?
Thank you so much for this question. Yes, I started off about 5 years ago working as an in-home professional organizer. And within that first year, I quickly noticed that there were layers deeper. So the external clutter that we're seeing in our lives is often a reflection of what is happening internally. And it's going to sound so familiar, right? We're busy, we're frazzled, we're burnout. And to me, there's this element where we're spinning in circles, we're unsure of what to focus on when, again, feeling frazzled. That's the cluttered mindset that most of us are familiar with. Yes, life is absolutely busy, but I love to help folks come back to the place of intentionality and choice, which often involves slowing down and pausing long enough to see where our level of control is. So to be more specific, when I talk about a clutter-free mindset, which I believe is available to everyone, I'm talking about these moments where you're going throughout your day and there's a barrage of automatic thoughts that might pop into your brain, right? It's telling you what you should be doing, how you should be spending your time. And for some of us, that internal dialogue is negative and it says we're not doing enough. And I really help clients and women. I encourage them to pause for a moment and recognize that those automatic thoughts are not the truth that we have to believe and follow. So there's a process of just getting that noise down and out onto paper, or your preferred method of note-taking, and acknowledging that your brain is always going to give you way more to do than you realistically have time for in your 24 hours of the day. And accepting that you're 100% in charge of that 24 hours. Then I advise using grounding questions like, what do I want in any given situation? And recognize that you're always making choices to prioritize the top couple things from that list of all the to-dos that's never ending, that you're making choices to prioritize the top couple of things that make sense. And the last element of a clutter-free mindset is really learning to treat yourself with love and compassion as you make these intentional choices throughout the day.
Yeah. I want to reflect that middle point back to you, because one thing you've talked about that really resonated with me is that your view of having an organized life looks like you being in the center of your own life, not your stuff, not the demands of your job or even your family, but you. And I know this mental clutter that we all have, and also the invisible load, which I think a lot of women have heard thrown around, but we might want to define, that often comes with motherhood, easily stands between us and being the center of our own lives. So can you talk a little bit about that, this invisible load, mental load? There's lots of different terms, if there's a distinction there, and how you see that preventing women from feeling like they're the main character in their own story.
For sure. So when we talk about the mental load, invisible work, there are many interchangeable terms. We're talking specifically about the cognitive work that's happening in your brain that's invisible. So everything that goes into running a house, caring for others, that's happening in the background. A good way to think about it is children, partners, sometimes they think that the house operates by magic, that the toilet paper always gets replaced, that the fruit always magically appears in the fridge, that the forms get signed and turned into the office on time at school. And we are the ones who are doing the work. So if you are the default parent, default mother carrying that mental load, you're doing a lot of work internally to notice, anticipate, plan, and then, of course, execute on all of these care-related tasks. But so much of it happens in our brain, and we don't often give ourselves credit for the amount of time, attention, energy, focus, our capacity that that takes up internally. So whether you're working outside the home in a paid capacity or you're working inside the home all day in an unpaid capacity, we're always noticing and planning. And when we're caring for our household or caring for others, that qualifies as work.
So I want to make sure we have time to delve into some of the key concepts and learnings of the fair play method, but the thinking of the task is what is just sticking out to me immediately, because I'll give you an example from my own life. My girls want to do a couple camps this summer, which is great. And I'm lucky enough to have a partner who does a lot, but this is just feels like a classic example. Like I could ask him to maybe physically sign up one of the kids for camp, but I've been thinking about it for months. I've been ruminating. I've been doing research. I've been talking to other moms. I've been filling out health forms for the other camps they're signed up for. I've been looking at what weeks would work. You know, it's just like on and on and on. And I just wanted to give that example because I'm sure it's very relatable of that invisible labor. Like, is signing someone up for camp that big of a deal? No. But when you look at it, of all of the steps, it's taken quite a bit of mental time from me.
You just hit it spot on. And everyone who's listening, I know they're nodding along because the task is signing up for summer camp. The invisible work, the cognitive load, the mental labor is all of those steps that you ran through in terms of noticing, planning, and coordinating with other elements of the household, including the schedule and the budget. We talk about planning for summer camp or sign up for summer camp as if it is a singular thing, but it is so much more. And so that's why, for example, the to-do list is a bottomless bucket and is always refilling, because we're moving throughout our day. Those thoughts pop into the brain of another thing I've got to add to the list that is all the pre-work for signing up for summer camp and all the elements that are intertwined with it. And that's what's causing the clutter in our minds. Getting it down and out, obviously, is very helpful. But what I want to turn our attention to is something that you pointed out, which is delegation versus transferring ownership fully of a task. So this is an idea that comes from Eve Rodsky's fair play method. And in most situations, what we're most familiar with, whether in the workplace or at home, is asking someone to complete the tasks. So will you please sign the kids up for summer camp? Okay, so that's going on and entering the form, paying the bill, perhaps that final stage of completing the task of signing them up. And we pass that to our partner, for example, we delegate it. The difference with the fair play method, when we talk about transferring full ownership, we're also asking our partner to do all of the pre-work, the planning, the noticing, the anticipating. So that summer camp is actually an entire package that we're handing off to our partner or someone else in the household that is supporting us.
That's a really big shift. Just for sake of examples, because I'm sure there's common examples that come up a lot with your clients, can you walk us through one more common example where women are like, aha, like no wonder this feels overwhelming, because it's not just this, it's all of the things.
So I'm actually going to approach it from a different perspective. So when we look at, and again, in the Fair Play method, there are 100 tasks that she has identified as the top tasks that make a household run. And they don't apply to every family or every situation, but these are the most commonly completed tasks. Within that, the number one card that men execute most fully is the garbage card. So we're going to hit it from a different angle. So when we think about garbage within the household, someone has to notice that the garbage can is full and perhaps gather the garbage from different cans around the household, centralize it, plan to take it and put it out on the date that the garbage truck comes, or, you know, down the chute in an apartment building. We can use that as an example of, okay, my husband, my partner, they can do that from start to finish. That's the one thing where they're noticing that it needs to be done and getting it done. So we can use that as a model for any other task in the household. So for example, the same thing would apply to looking into the pantry, noticing what needs to go onto the grocery list, figuring out what brand we need to buy, what the kids are eating, what they're not eating, keeping track of that, right? There's so many elements that go into getting the grocery list together for the week so that we can meal plan and get food on the table. Transferring ownership means that we're encouraging our partner to do that pre-work of noticing all the way through to making sure the list is ready to go to the store or the foods get ordered if you're ordering online, et cetera. So if your partner can notice that the garbage is full, they are equally as capable as noticing that we're out of mustard or blueberries, or the kids aren't eating a snack, that particular brand of snack anymore, because it's not disappearing from the pantry.
So do you notice a lot when you work with your clients that it takes some sussing out? I mean, this is not something that would happen overnight, because I can already think of people saying, well, my partner is actually really good at this, so they just do all of that, and I prefer this. I want to know what comes up, what the biggest like sticking points and resistance points are when you implement this. And also, I'd like to hear a little bit about switching tasks, because you talk about that. And I think it's interesting, because even if I have a preferred task, I think I would appreciate the tasks my husband owns if I did them once in a while and I understood. So I think that could be good on my end too.
I love that you say this, because within 100 cards, first, there are the tasks that are repetitive. These are our daily grind tasks like garbage, dishes, meal prep, et cetera. These are the tasks that get irritating and boring and are not very exciting over time. The goal of the Fair Play method in particular is a few different things. One, it is to do exactly what you said. So some of us have preferred tasks, some that we're already doing. We want everyone or as many people in the household to understand and be able to notice, plan, and execute as many household tasks as possible so that we can actually swap them, so that the same person doesn't have to do that task that grates on them, maybe doing the dishes at the end of the day each night, that they don't feel resentment because they're the one who is always doing it. We're trying to get to a understanding about how we'd like this task completed as a partnership, as a household, so that any one person can step in at any given time to do the task, because inevitably someone's going to get sick and a partner's going to need to step in. Sometimes mom wants to go away with her girlfriends and partner needs to step up and step in. Perhaps someone needs to travel for work. So yes, you're going to want to know where financial documents are kept, how to maintain the car, who the lawn service provider is, if that applies to you. So one key element is having everyone educated on how the household is run so that any one person can step up and step in when called upon to do so, or just because we're trying to get to that place where there's more equitable balance of who's doing what in the household. So it might not be a 50-50 split where, you know, it's completely equal, but we're to the place where everyone feels like they are contributing effectively to making the household.
Tell me a little bit more about how this has impacted your relationship with your kids, or you've seen it impact the relationships of your clients and their children.
Great question. So the fair play method, any type of explicit or open conversation that you're having around household chores or tasks is going to make a difference because it is investing in the values and the mission of your household for the long term. So as parents, our goal is to raise thoughtful, self-reliant children. We want to raise human beings that are going to go out into the world and contribute to the households that they create when they grow up, right? So teaching your children to, and you know, the common term is chores, but like teaching your children that they make an impact in the household through eating food, wearing clothes, using the shower and the bathroom, riding in the car. Everyone who lives in the household makes an impact. So by teaching them these elements of how a household runs, you're showing them that they can contribute over the long term. So talking to your children about the budget, for example, helps them understand that, again, budgets don't just happen by magic. Talking with them about thank you notes, for example, if that's something that's important to you, why do we do it? Going through the stories and anchoring these conversations in the values of your particular household is what makes a difference. So when I say investing in the long term, and again, even if you're transferring tasks with your partner, you're encouraging conversation to make sure that we're all on the same page for the long term and health of our relationship. So that's kind of how I think that it matters, right? So I am now explicitly saying to my son, hey, what do you notice needs to be done here in your bedroom, for example? And I use that language with intention. What do you notice? Because that's often the part that when kids grow up, that might be missing, right? When we give them chores, they're just executing what we tell them to do. But we want to back up for a moment and talk to kids and our partner or anyone else in the household about this step of noticing what needs to be done as well.
Yeah, I've shifted my tone. This is definitely an area I'm working on because my daughters who are in the household are 11 and 12, and I feel like they could be doing more, frankly. And I've started talking to them a little bit about it in terms of me having a lot of aspirations creatively and with my business, and that I prioritize family, but I also am a person and I want to have space for all of these things. I'm a better person when I get to all of these things. And I feel like that message resonates with them. You know, one of my daughters hopped up and started unloading the dishwasher, which
bless you if that happens all the time in your house, but usually I'm still given a little bit of a nudge. And it just made me feel good. You know, they want to support me.
I love that. And yes, it does absolutely start with a nudge, but it is just saying to them and using that explicit language, hey, I noticed that the dishwasher is full. Who do you think is going to empty the dishwasher? Right? And just having that conversation. And the cards in particular, the Fair Play cards, are great because even before you get to this place of transferring ownership or getting kids to do chores, if that's the way you want to frame it, they make a great conversation piece just with a family. So you literally can pull out one of the 100 cards and just kind of, I'm going to do it right now. I have them in front of me. Homework, projects, and school supplies for kids. So that's a task. So talking with your kids, like, how do you think that you get all of the materials necessary to do your science project that you have to do at home or build that, I'm dating myself, diorama?
Love a diorama.
And you have to take into school, right? How does it happen that you have all the materials for back to school at the beginning of the year? Talking through those number of steps and the noticing, the pre-planning that has to take place, even outside of that moment where the task is occurring, right? We're just having conversations to help everyone in the household recognize that it doesn't operate by magic, that someone has to think about the deadline, the materials needed, and set aside time to make sure that the homework and the projects get done.
I think that just crystallizing that idea of the mental load and all the pre-planning that oftentimes I don't want to be sexist, but a lot of that falls on women. And I feel like they don't always have the language to articulate it, but it can really tip women into that resentment zone because they feel like they've spent so much time on something and nobody else recognizes how much of a mental and physical time suck it's been. Would you agree?
I would absolutely agree. And again, the goal is not to shame or blame our partners for what they haven't done, but encourage people to come to the table and have a conversation about the invisible work. So the issue or the problem isn't your partner, it's the work, right? So the cards allow you to lay the task down on the table between two or more people and say, okay, we're not the problem getting through this particular task. Let's say making plans for the weekend, right? Who's going to be responsible for that? How do we define fun as a family? What is it exactly we want to have our weekends look like? Who's going to be in charge of making all of those things happen? And just having a frank and honest discussion about whatever the card or the topic or the issue might be, it's the work that we're choosing to do as a household and family. So how are we collectively going to get that done?
Is there anything else about kind of the concept specific to the Fair Play method that you want to make sure to touch on?
I mean, I think I'll just give an overview. The cards are really about identifying the shared values of your household. It's not about getting through all the to-dos and saying we have to complete 100 cards in any given household. It's looking through these tasks and figuring out what are our top priorities, what do we find important in our household, and learning from one another what that might have looked like for you in your household growing up. So getting into the stories of why we have the magical beings that we do in our household, like the tooth fairy, for example. It's important to me because that's what I experienced or didn't experience growing up. So again, it's not necessarily about the work, but the reasons why we value these tasks in our home. Another element is that we want to just be as explicit as possible about certain things like, what does it mean when the kitchen is clean? What does it mean when a room is tidy or a task is complete? We think that we know one another, our partner, better than we actually do, because I guarantee you everyone who's listening is nodding their head saying, yes, my version of a clean kitchen is different than my partner's. My version of a task being, you know, done or complete is different than when my kid thinks it's done or complete. So just having some language to talk about what we decide that means in our household.
So interesting. For women who are inspired by this conversation, I hope they check out the book, even consider working with a coach if that's in their capacity. But do you have any just tips or strategies women could use straight away if they're just like, oh my gosh, this mental load stuff is resonating with me and I just really am ready to do something more immediately to start decreasing my mental load?
For sure. I think the first thing that we can do is, again, getting it down and out of our brains, which many of us already do, giving ourselves permission to not do it all, right? We think that because we thought of it, because it popped up in our brain, we've got to execute and make it happen. But I would just offer to pause for a moment and say, like, hey, what can I realistically accomplish in the next couple of days? What can I outsource if that is possible? What can I transfer to another person? But really just getting curious, because there's elements of unlearning that we need to do as women as well, right? Getting curious about why I feel that I need to make it through this list. And instead just saying, okay, I need grace and patience with myself. Maybe what I need instead is 30 minutes by myself rather than to complete one more thing on this list. Because the one thing we didn't talk about is, you know, this magical, mythical unicorn space of time for ourselves and what it means to take a break and get some rest and restore.
Yes, I love that topic. And I feel like we're on the same page with just reminding women that when you show up for yourself and you're in that energized state, you have a ripple effect on everyone you encounter in your household. And when you keep doing things or, you know, being critical, like, oh, let me just do it because that's not right, then you tip into that resentment zone. And we all know that person. We all have a friend who's probably there right now and they're not living their best life, in my opinion.
No. And it brings us back to that idea of conscious choices, right? When we feel obligated to always give our time away to the to-do list, to the household chores, to our children, to our partner, we don't win. And we need time by ourselves, with others, with friends, to nourish ourselves. And that actually is where we create a win-win situation. So it sounds counterintuitive, but always giving yourself to others, that's a dynamic where we lose out because we get resentful, we get drained, we burn out over time. But whether it's 30 minutes, 3 hours, 3 days, if you can get away for a while, when we give ourselves permission to be unavailable, that's a win for our family, for our workplace, for our community, because we come back ready to be present.
I love how you put that. And I know that you've talked about how you're no longer feeling guilty when you're away from your family. That's something that so many, I mean, I've been on girls trips and some of the moms are checking in on their babies. So I get it, you know, different phases need more attention. But
I'm curious if you have any suggestions for women in terms of not feeling guilty about taking the time for themselves and being away from their family.
Yeah, I totally get it. And I think you're right for checking in on the season of life that you might be in or the dynamic that might exist in your relationship. But that being said, recognizing that we're all culturally conditioned to always be giving our time away and recognizing that it's not sustainable, which is why I often talk about seeing yourself at the center of your household, the center of your life, not as the foundation. Because I think for so many of us, so many women, we see ourselves kind of carrying the weight of the whole household and thinking that if we move an inch, the whole thing will collapse. So when we see ourselves at the center and begin to recognize that our time is finite, it's limited, just like every other human being's, that we can focus on how our time and attention are our most valuable resources, and that we're always making conscious choices about what to do with that time. So we step away from guilt by just acknowledging that it comes up. It's okay if it does, but then reframing it as a choice. I'm choosing to do X, Y, and Z because it's important to me. There are always a million and one other things that we could be doing with our time. But when we understand why we're choosing to do that fun thing or take some time for ourselves, then we can own that it's simply a choice, just like it is to show up at your kids' sports game or to show up for a particular work meeting or to support your partner when they need you. All those choices are valid and they're all equal. And the time for yourself is as valuable and important. It goes on the same playing field as all of the other choices you could be making with your time.
I absolutely agree with that. I always close my conversations with an opportunity for reflection. I know you mentioned enjoying grounding questions yourself. So in this area of how moms can lighten their mental load, so ultimately they can have more time for what lights them up and be more present when they are with their people they love, what's one question moms could be asking themselves more?
What do I want? Such a powerful question. And I think the most revolutionary question a woman or a mother could ask herself. It's so powerful because it requires you to validate yourself, to see yourself, and to listen into what your heart truly wants. And oftentimes that I find when I ask myself that question, when I listen to the answer is a win for me and it's a win for everyone else in my household because it makes me happy and fulfilled and everyone else gets a little piece of that as well.
That's a beautiful way to close. Thank you so much. I know my listeners will want to follow you and learn more about Fair Play and everything else you talk about. So where can we find you, Amelia?
Thanks for asking. I am a pleasant solution in all the places. So my website is a pleasant solution. You can find me on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and I also host a podcast called A Pleasant Solution, Embracing an Organized Life.
Great. This was so wonderful to connect. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
I'm so glad you joined me today. If you're looking for more, feel free to connect with me on Instagram at Whitney Woman. And if you enjoyed the show, I invite you to support me by leaving a review or sharing it with a friend. Hope you have an inspired day.